If you're anything like me, you spent your childhood assuming that one day you'd meet your Prince Charming. You'd get married, you'd have a nice house in the suburbs, a dog, a career, and a couple of kids. It never crossed your mind that Prince Charming wouldn't come along, or that tragically you'd lose him before his time, or that your marriage wouldn't work out, or even that your biological clock would have other ideas. Or maybe you never really wanted that sort of happily ever after. Maybe you never wanted a man, but you did know you always wanted children. We're living in an age where, for the first time, women can embrace motherhood on their own terms. They no longer have to put their lives on hold waiting for the right man, or settling for someone who they know isn't right for them, just so they can become a mother. More women than ever before are embarking on the journey to become what's known as a solo mother by choice. And while for a lot of us it doesn't feel like a choice, but more a necessity, the bottom line is there are now options for you to be able to fulfill your dreams of motherhood if the traditional route isn't playing out as expected. The No Need for Prince Charming podcast will share stories of Australian women who have successfully become solo mothers by choice. They each have a unique story as to why they decided to pursue motherhood in this way and the journey they had to go through to make this dream a reality. The hope is that by sharing these stories, you'll have the knowledge and the confidence to embark on this amazing journey yourself if you determine it's the right one for you. In the words of Walt Disney, all of our dreams can come true if we have the courage to pursue them. All you need is faith, trust, and a little bit of pixie dust. So welcome to the podcast today, Lucy. I would love to start by understanding a little bit about who you were before you decided to become a solo mum by choice.
Oh my gosh. I was a tragic single, continually dating, dating all the wrong men, attracting all the wrong men, sleeping with all the wrong men, but just such a romantic at heart and just hoping that somehow my Prince Charming was amongst all of these deadbeat idiots that I was spending time with. It was just, yeah, it was ridiculous and really cringe. But, yeah, most of my free time was consumed with, trying to date and everything. And I sort of got burnt out from it in the end, but it was just, there's only so many times you can get back up off the horse and, and generate self-esteem and confidence again. And I think then also once you get into that cycle of bad date after bad date, I don't think you're projecting really your best self to the universe. And you probably then are susceptible to attracting yet more crap, I think. So yeah, I was just in this terrible cycle of I did have a couple of long-term pleasant-ish relationships in my 20s, but from late 20s really to late 30s, so a solid 10 years of just really nothing ever more than 3 months, no one really particularly great, me compensating and ignoring a lot of red flags just because I was so keen to find love, to make it work. And also I kind of think I was trying to, it's silly to go back all this way to childhood, but I just always was that sort of black sheep at school and everything. And I thought as well, if I could find that amazing husband, that would make me look worthy and like a decent person to like how I still felt sort of substandard compared to other people at school or whatever. So I think I was always just trying to make myself feel like I fit in and all those types of things as well. But it wasn't to be at that time anyway. So, yeah, that was what led to my solo mum journey, I guess.
I can totally relate to so much of that, especially the childhood of I just need this and then everything will be fine and I'll fit in where I don't otherwise. And even like in your 20s when all your friends are getting married, you're like, once I get that thing, I'll be the same.
And so they just make it look so easy and maybe it is, and maybe that's, I think that would be the difference between the right relationship versus the wrong.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's also, and then you get into that self-doubt thing of, well, maybe I'm not that decent a person, that maybe I'm not deserving. And that's really obviously unproductive and self-destructive to go down that line of thinking, but you sort of naturally do. You're like, oh my gosh, what am I projecting to the universe that I'm not attracting anything remotely reasonable? It's just, yeah, so it's a bit of a head fuck, so to speak, isn't it?
And did you always know you wanted to be a mum? Like that was the end goal?
Definitely. And that was sort of after I turned 30, that was sort of then what I had that subconscious pressure that I've got to, because then it's going to be a few years to fall in love and properly commit, and then to start trying for a baby. So then that was an added pressure to it. So then once again, I think that added to not projecting the right thing and wanting it to be instantaneously fireworks and amazing and just impatient and yeah, all the wrong things. But I think it was always underlining it, everything. And even when I tried to sort of say, no, you're independent, you're a new age feminist woman, you don't have to be a mum to feel validated. I'm like, no, come on, you are a natural nurturer. You do want a mini human to care for and to raise and to love. So, and I guess that is as much an equally feminist choice that I've chosen, that I want to be a mother. And I know that I always knew I would be good at it. I'd like to think I am, but yeah, so I did always know, and I tried to push it to the side for a while when it wasn't working out, thinking, oh, maybe I can just build this really fulfilling life without that. But that was just never going to be. Yeah, deep down I knew it had to happen. I had to try and make it happen, or else life just wouldn't really be worth living, really, so to speak. I know that sounds melodramatic, but yeah,
I feel like I could have
that
said exactly the same thing. So no, not melodramatic as well. Or
was.
maybe I'm melodramatic too. Meh. And was there like a certain moment that suddenly you made this decision and went, this is it. I know what I need to do now. I'm going to do this on my own.
Yeah, so it had always been in the back of my mind, and even before I made the actual firm decision, I had browsed sperm bank websites and everything. I don't even know how the first little seed that came into my mind, but it had always been like in the back of my mind. My age kept changing. I'm like, no, if I'm still single at 33, I'll start pursuing that. If I'm still single at 35, then those ages came around quicker and quicker. Like, oh my gosh. So then the actual final thing for me was when COVID hit. And I think for a lot of people, it was a period of self-reflection, reevaluating your life choices, your direction. So that's when I really put the steps in place to make it happen. So initially having my AMH tested, because then I thought, even though, of course, now knowing what I do about fertility, I knew that now I know that that wouldn't have ever told me the quality of my eggs. I at least wanted to get that ballpark idea of how many eggs I had left, because it's funny, isn't it? You spend so many years of your adult life trying not to get pregnant, unless you've had a bit of a whoopsie or whatever. You really don't know your fertility. So I sort of thought, why would there be an issue? I'm sure it's fine. But
And we're just
no.
not taught about it either. Like everyone's like, you're going to
No.
get pregnant by sneezing. No one
Yeah.
tells you that after 35, everything drops off a cliff. And it's like, that's what we should be teaching girls. Be sensible up
Oh
until
my
that
God,
point.
yeah.
But there is actually a time limit on things. So.
Very true. Yeah, exactly. You're sort of told the opposite of how easy it is to get pregnant versus that it can be bloody difficult. Yeah, so that was sort of the catalyst. COVID and work, sort of, I mainly work in aviation, and my side hustle has always been sort of cabaret, musical theatre related stuff. So both of those things grinding halt.
An interesting combination.
I find myself like working at Woolies and a COVID hotel during this time, and I'm like, okay,
Oh,
well,
wow.
now it's really time to evaluate what's important to me in life, and finding out about the beginnings of the solo mum journey were what were important. So firstly got my AMH result, and it was drastically low. It was sort of, I was 35 at that time, but it was on par with a woman in her 40s. So I'm like, okay, there is zero time to lose here. So from getting that result to making the appointment with my fertility specialist was luckily only about a month. And then from there, she straight away appreciated the sense of urgency based on my low AMH. So we sort of agreed, okay, we'd do two IUI attempts before moving on to IVF, because we just don't have the time up our sleeve. Another thing with, yeah, not having time up our sleeve. Luckily, the donor coordinator at my fertility clinic told me that if I went to Canberra versus doing it in my home state of New South Wales, there's actually no wait on the sperm. So I was going to be waiting up till 8 months a year if I did it in Sydney. Yeah,
Was that just
nuts.
because of shortage? I think they have quite strict family limits as well, which
They
probably impacts
do. It's
supply.
really restrictive. I think it's only three family groups per Cadona or something in New South Wales. And even the number of vials you had to purchase was more. There were just lots of restricting factors, whereas in ACT, zero wait time. So from when I went with a US-based donor, because once again, less wait time. And from when I purchased the sperm to when it was in the lab in Canberra was less than a week, even in the height of
Even in COVID,
lockdown.
that's pretty good. Wow.
Well, all the other internet shopping that went missing during COVID, that was luckily not it.
Have been
Thank
so carefully tracking that package. You know, will it get there in time? Oh, yeah.
I'm just, oh, I mean, I don't know exactly your journey with the donor sperm stuff, but it's just like you never think you're going to get excited about sperm when it's, but when the lab called me and it had arrived,
The best delivery ever.
Yeah, so that's sort of it in a nutshell, I guess, of how it all got started. Yeah.
So you were gonna have to go to Canberra from New South Wales for all of your treatment.
Yes, so luckily, blood tests, like monitoring blood tests and everything, I can do in Sydney. I've been able to do in Sydney, but if it involved any sort of procedure, I'd have to go to Canberra. So then, also in the height of COVID, there were border closures.
Yeah, I was
So I
just thinking
think
that.
oh my gosh, it was literally in the lead up to my first frozen embryo transfer. I think I'd successfully done the egg collection. I'd done two unsuccessful IUIs. I'd done my egg collection. That was that, and then it was in the lead up to my embryo transfer. I think I'd ovulated, and at that point, the border was still shut. And then luckily, miraculously, somehow, thank you, universe, it opened just in time for me to get there for the embryo transfer, and I didn't have to delay it a month or anything. So it just all fell into place, and I was fortunate to conceive my son from my first frozen embryo transfer. So,
Fabulous. Did you
oh
have
my
a
God.
fresh transfer before that, or did they just go straight to frozen?
No, actually, I was on such a high dose of follicle stimulant that I got sort of into, if I had lots of ovarian reserve, I would have been in ovarian hyperstimulation territory. My estrogen was so high, so I wasn't in a position hormonally to do a fresh transfer, and it wasn't my preference. I had wanted to ideally have the embryos tested if possible, just to,
Oh, yeah.
rule out anything. But if that had been an option, I would have potentially done it, but it just wasn't for multiple reasons. So yeah, that was why I think my egg collection was in the November, and then I needed a couple of, and then there was Christmas and everything, but I needed a bit of a time frame for my estrogen to settle and everything. So that's why then my embryo transfer was February the next year.
And you were successful, which is very exciting.
Oh my gosh, yeah, I got very lucky. Now I know how very fortunate I was. But, yeah, definitely. So that was amazing.
So, choosing an American donor, how did you go about that, and what was your criteria you were looking for with them?
Oh, my criteria really had to go out the window because, and I'm absolutely 100% happy with the donor I chose in the end, but I went into it. You browse the American Sperm Bank websites as just a normal member of the public, and you see hundreds upon hundreds of profiles. So you think, oh, I could choose exactly what hair color, exactly what eye color, whatever height, whatever profession, the world's my oyster. But then there's a lot more stringent criteria for what Australia allows and whatever that process is. So then it actually was only five that I could choose from.
Oh,
So
wow.
suddenly all the ones that I'd browsed and had my eye on prior to the number really being dwindled down was just out the window. But the first profile I stumbled upon, at first he was the opposite of what I thought. I mean, it sounds, I hate even saying it, it just sounds really yucky, but I wanted blonde, blue eyes, over 6 foot, blah blah blah, all this crap. And straight away, this beautiful little cherubic baby face had, really dark brown eyes, really dark brown hair. And I'm like, no, that's not what you were looking for, but that sweet baby face. So anyway, that caught my attention, but I just browsed through the others. And in the end, that first beautiful little cherubic baby face was the one who did it. And it wasn't because of anything superficial. It was because in his essay things where they had to write up various bits and pieces. He mentioned qualities that are important to him, and said empathy towards all people, animals, et cetera, et cetera. And as soon as I read that, I'm like, oh my gosh, yes, this is him. That's, oh, without a doubt. So yeah, it was a multi-angled approach. He wasn't the 6 foot 2 brain surgeon with blue eyes and blonde hair. It's ridiculous.
But he sounds very kind and empathetic, which is.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So, and that was what was important. And another really silly comparison, the sperm bank people did like a celebrity comparison for each of the people, and they said that he looked like what's his name, Jason Biggs from American Pie
Oh.
as an actor. And I just, that just cracked me up so much. I thought of him dancing with that apple pie and everything in the movie. And I just, even though that's not actually him, but that just made me laugh so much. I'm like, yep. And apparently he walks into the sperm bank always whistling a happy tune and all this. I'm like, oh, he sounds like a really lovely guy. So that was what sealed the deal for me. Multiple things, but most of it, them weren't superficial.
Going into it, did you think about whether you'd be able to contact the donor? And is there something set up through the American Sperm Bank for you to be able to do that, or donor siblings?
Yeah, so both were important to me from, and no judgment to anyone else who has a different journey or a different choice, but for me, it was important from the psychology of my unborn child. I thought that's, if that's a question that comes up and that's an avenue they want to explore, I want it to be possible. And also, actually, that's another restriction with Australia, and that's why there aren't as many US donors that can donate to Australia, because they have to approve that the child could contact them when they're 18. So, which I'm thankful for. So, yeah, so that definitely was important to me regardless. And luckily, it is a thing. I mean, hopefully, they can still be tracked down in all those years. Who knows if they've still got the same contact details. But, and I was, hopeful to meet a dibbling or a donor sibling too, if that was possible. And that was another thing on his profile. It said that he had fathered other children. So I'm like, okay, well, his sperm worked. So that was a positive for me, because some of the others didn't say that. And well, I know it doesn't necessarily mean anything. It might just mean they haven't had a chance to do it yet. But I can't, that was another positive. I'm like, at least I know that, yeah, he's definitely not firing blanks. And that's a plus. You'd assume their testing would rule that out, but you know, anyway.
You never know.
True. Yeah,
And
and
so,
just
have you been
actually,
able to find out if there are any donor siblings out there?
well, amazingly, so it's only just very recently happened. So when you first give birth to the child for that particular donor, they let you join a forum through the sperm bank, and then there are subdivisions per donor. And you can jump in. And as soon as I did, someone else had posted that they're a solo mum, with a 2.5 year old daughter. They didn't say where they were from, and I didn't even know if they were in Australia, but they spelt mum, MUM. So I'm like, that's promising.
Ooh,
They
yeah.
might be in the UK, they might be in Australia, but that's promising. So I straight away replied, but it's sort of a bit of an old school forum. So it's not easy to really navigate or get notifications, but I set it up that I would get notifications as soon as that mum saw my reply message and replied. So waited and waited, nothing. I kept on logging back in, there was nothing, and I even emailed the sperm bank to say, look, she said she wants contact, but maybe she just hasn't seen my message. Can
Maybe
you
your forum's rubbish.
intervene? Can you maybe help? And I said, no, we don't get involved. Like, okay, well, it's worth a try. And then anyway, just the other morning, probably literally 2 weeks ago or so, I was looking in my email first thing in the morning, notification from the Fairfax Cryobank forum. So and so has replied. Anyway, so she's a solo mum in Brisbane to
Amazing.
And yeah, so we've been texting back and forward. We haven't FaceTimed or anything yet, but that's our intention, and we will hopefully meet eventually. But yeah, so that's going well, and it's really interesting. Like, our children very much look like mini uses, but there are similarities of characteristics for them. Like, they're both long and lanky, and that type of thing, and they've got certain, the way the They've got the skin under their eyes, sort of, not to say they've got bags under their eyes, but just the way the skin sits is similar to the donor's baby picture. So there's just, even though they predominantly look like us, there's definitely a family similarity, which is really cool. And obviously, when we do get to chat more, it'd be lovely to have that in common, not just the solo mum journey, but then be interesting to hear how she came to choose our donor as well. So,
Yeah.
that's cool to have that in common,
Oh, and
really.
how fabulous to have that so early on in their lives as well, that they will just
Yes.
grow up always knowing this donor sibling, even if they don't see each other
Yeah.
very often.
No, so I'm looking forward to seeing where that relationship might go. And yeah, no, it's good. And I guess it's sort of good. There's a bit of distance, so we're not necessarily in each other's pockets if we don't want to be or whatever. But at least we're not too far afield for catching up eventually either. Easier than a trip to the UK or the US or whatever, I guess. We've even jokingly mentioned when I guess it will be when her daughter turns 18, assuming she wants to, we should do a whole family trip to the US to meet the donor.
Make the donor go to Disneyland. Sounds wonderful.
We're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves, but hey, why not dream
That's all
big?
right. We've already got to donor siblings, and all we know is that your frozen transfer worked. So, backtrack. Obviously, we got a
Yes.
child as a result.
Exactly, we have indeed. Yes.
So, pregnancy and birth, that was all kind of fine, or.
Yeah, I can't complain. It was textbook. Yeah, it was they kept on wanting to find things because I was, I guess, technically a bit overweight, but no gestational diabetes, no preeclampsia, textbook, spontaneous labor at 38 weeks plus one day. It was long and pretty chilled, though. It was, yeah, and I can't complain. He had a bit of a rough start, and he swallowed his meconium during the last tiny bit of birth, so he did have to be resuscitated at birth.
Oh, that would have been scary.
It was very scary and very overwhelming. And oh, I hit myself now for even saying it, but my friend who was my birth support person and I had said, yeah, you never really want a baby to be born not screaming, do you? Like that's a really bad sign. And what happened? He was silent when he came out. I'm like, oh shit. Oh, but oh my gosh. So that was really terrifying, but he was luckily okay. He just had to be in special care for 5 days. And even the resuscitation process caused a pneumothorax, so air bubbles in his lungs as well. So, oh, the poor little guy. So, I mean, I feel really guilty saying it, but I mean, I could have practically run a marathon the next day. Not that I was in any way fit, but I mean, I felt really good from my recovery, so I felt guilty. But look at the price that that's come at. He's in such a bad shape, poor little guy. But there's no residual now, so it's amazing how resilient they are and how quickly it can turn. And that's even what they, the doctors and nurses reassured me that little kids can get sick really quickly, but they also can get well very quickly too. So that was good to witness firsthand. So yeah, you'd never know it now that there was anything that happened. So
So stressful. Were you able to stay in hospital with
yeah.
him the whole time, or did you have to come home?
I did for 4 of the 5 days. So then on the last day, I'd spent one night at home, and oh, now if only I could have my time again, I would have actually had a really nice long night's sleep at home that night.
You don't
I
know
thought,
that at the time.
and I couldn't. I was just like too busy looking at all my photos of him on my phone and everything. I'm like, oh, you idiot! If only I'd not that one night of sleep would have been compensated for however many sleepless nights. But so then it was only one night that I was home without him. So that was then great to go back, and I spent the next day with him. And then it was that evening that we went home together. But even ridiculous things, and I'm sure I'm not alone. But having to stand there looking at a YouTube tutorial for how to fold down my pram to get it in the car, like it was the airway to drive home. Like, oh my God,
So you
you
maybe
should have rang me.
weren't that prepared for him coming home. So anyone
Obviously not
who's
as much
pregnant
reluctance.
currently, learn how to fold down your pram before the baby arrives.
Yes,
And
get that down pat.
my best tip that I wish I'd known as well is if you
Yeah.
have a dog, practice walking them with the pram before you get the baby as well.
Ah, okay. Yeah, because
Mine
that would
did
be
not
another
know what to
six.
do.
Gotcha. Yeah,
Really
and I guess
hard.
the lead can get all tangled up with all the wheels and everything, and
Because I just walk in
yeah,
front of it
wow.
and get run over, and oh, yeah. Or they pull in a different direction, and you're trying to
Yeah,
recover. And, oh, yeah.
you
So.
wouldn't even think of those things, would you, until you've lived it. So yeah, good word of advice.
So he came home. Did you have some good support at home, or how did you navigate those first few newborn weeks?
The first few weeks I was totally solo. The help I did get was someone just to come in daily to feed my cats and do the kitty litter and everything, just so it was one less thing to worry about. But otherwise I was on my own for those first 2 weeks. He didn't put on all of his birth weight. And now in retrospect, I'm like, if a newborn baby is crying, just put a boob or a bottle in their mouth. Just keep feeding them, even if you think you only just fed them. Just feed them again, because you can't feed them too much. That's my life lesson. But yeah, he hadn't quite regained all of his weight. So then I took him to the hospital because I was worried he'd seemed distressed. It was nothing really to be too concerned about. It was just that maybe I needed to feed him more, which sounds horrible. I feel really bad, but yeah, but I wasn't trying to starve my baby. But yeah, in retrospect, maybe I should have been a bit just, yeah, feeding him, feeding him, feeding him. That would be my big takeaway. So then
I
when
think
they
that's so common though, is nobody warned you of what breastfeeding's going to be like or what they really need. And because you can't tell how much they've got or anything else, you're just like, I think I'm doing the right things, but you've got nowhere to
So
tell.
true.
So, and we all
That's
feel
so
so,
true.
so guilty no matter how we do
Yeah.
it. So,
And yeah, best of intentions, isn't it? But yeah, as you say, you can't, if it is breast, you can't tell the quantity. So that's another thing that, oh, I'm with at least pumping or even formula, seeing the quantity, at least you know how much they're getting. But yeah, boob, you're sort of just flying blind, aren't you? I mean, and that's not to get into the debate of boob versus not, but yeah, you just genuinely don't know. You think they're sucking for ages, they're getting heaps, but yeah.
No.
So the takeaway from that hospital visit was just maybe like make his feeds more regular. So I think they said every 2 hours or something. I'm like, okay, there's no way I can do that on my own. That's just zero downtime. So put in an SOS call to my parents in Adelaide, and my dad is a real nurturer by nature, and he was more in a position to come to Sydney than my mum was at that time. So dad jumped on a plane the next day, and he came and he stayed for a month in the end. So then I did the night shifts, and he let me sleep for a solid chunk most days while he did the day shift, basically. So it worked out really well, and Arlo chubbed up nicely, and yeah, the rest is history, I guess. But that was still when he got home from Sydney, he still had to do the 2 week home isolation, because it was still, you had to get those border permits. I think they were just starting to relax those border permits and everything, but it was in that crazy post-COVID time, I guess, where you still had to do all that crazy stuff.
Yeah,
But
I was going to say, had they offered to come and help you and you said, no, I don't need it, or was it just hard to get there?
it was purely down to all the border closures and all that type of stuff, really. And at that time, it was still the hotel quarantine that you would have had to pay for. It's like, no. Yeah, I wouldn't have wanted to even ask that of them if they had to pay. So luckily, it all relaxed enough by that sort of point that it wasn't too much of an issue for dad to come. And yeah, I think it was a month that he stayed, which, oh my gosh, it was so lovely, both from seeing them bond, but also just to have that backup. Re really important in those early stages. Another for baby number two, I think I'm going to make sure, and people told me to do this, but I'm like, oh, it's okay, it's okay. You know how it is. You're just dismissive of all this advice. I will have a freezer full of frozen meals. I didn't do that, and I think, yeah, that's important. So at least then you're not just eating crap because you're starving and you need something instantly. So
Yeah, it's
that's
that. And I don't know, if I had the money and was going again, I would definitely get a postpartum doula now, I think, as well.
oh
I
my
was
gosh,
interviewing her the other day, and it's like they come over, they do some chores for you, they cook you nutritious
oh
food, they
my
look after you,
God.
not the baby. And it's like, that's
Oh.
amazing. So, yeah.
If money was no object, that does sound lovely. That sounds wow. Yeah.
So, are
Yeah,
we
they're
pregnant
hoping
with
that
number
there.
two, or we're thinking about number
I am.
two?
So
Exciting.
yeah, so after a year and a half of trying and I obviously first time around was so fortunate with IVF, just like that. That wasn't my experience in my journey to number two. So I'm currently 11 weeks and 3 days with baby girl. Of course, like as everyone says, you don't care, as if I would have cared if it was a girl or a boy, but I am excited to have a little pigeon hair, so to speak, and all those little tutus and everything I bought prior to knowing what gender Arlo was, now will actually have someone to wear.
I can wear tutus if he wants.
True. But when he's too young to make the choice, I sort of, part of me was like, do I just, he'll never know if I just dress him up in those clothes. But no, I don't want the therapy later in life when he finds out. So now I actually have a little baby girl to wear that stuff. And yeah, so that's so exciting. I mean, I'm just thankful to be pregnant. But yeah, and the ridiculous thing was, so her embryo was created in the exact same round as Arlo's, but I wasn't using her embryo because the testing came back as mosaic, which I'm now thinking is less and less credible as an issue. I think based on, I think the testing has improved in the last several years, but on top of that, I think it just shows there can be anomalies in the testing that yeah, some of the cells look or some of the chromosomes look questionable, and they're possibly not necessarily. So that's why I was avoiding using her embryo in the first place. Of course, I didn't know it was a her. So I went on to use the, so I had five embryos from that round of IVF, and I used the remaining ones. But in between that, I did two additional, I attempted to do three additional egg collections. Two of them, like the first one, I only had one that was suitable for transfer at the end. The next one, I didn't have any embryos at the end. And then the third attempt was actually cancelled prior to the egg collection because my ovaries had essentially gone into retirement. So that was, we talk about closing that door on what, we think our future's going to be with our Prince Charming and becoming a mum, but that for me was a huge door being shut. That I'm like, okay, I've reached the end of my fertility, and it's 100% out of my hands now. It's not a case of I can just do more rounds of IVF and keep trying. I literally don't have any eggs, and at the same time, I had to be grateful for the fact that I started my journey when I did, because if I hadn't, I would be coming out of it without a child. So yeah, so that was a few or a year and a half of emotional, financial, physical turmoil
You
going
having to
through
go
all
to
of that.
Canberra for all of those as well?
Yeah, I
It
was,
would have
yes.
been hard with a what toddler?
It was because, of course, they don't let them come in when, well, of course, when you're having a procedure, but also then it was for some of the Canberra trips. I'm like, okay, do I leave him in Sydney and just get a babysitter? Do I try and find a friend to bring along with me? Do I find a random babysitter in Canberra? So it's in the logistics of all of that as well. So yeah, all the trips he came to Canberra, and oh, I've got the most amazing friend. I'm forever indebted to her. She was my birth support person, but she also has been my IVF support person throughout. Amazing. So she's a work colleague who, she's got four children who are considerably older and through the traditional means, but she's just been so supportive of my journey. And I couldn't have done a lot of it without her, especially with the Canberra trips. If you've had the sedation from the egg collection and you can't then drive yourself home, so if I hadn't have had her, I mean,
And
just
your
even in the
parents aren't in the
examining,
same state to be able to support you either.
they're not in the best health. So they weren't able to come across to help with that. So if they were sort of in better health potentially, but yeah, they weren't in a position to. So I really don't know what I would have done without her. For my embryo transfer, that's resulted, sorry, in my now 11 week plus 3 day baby. That I actually left Arlo in Sydney for the day with babysitter. And I just went, I thought, okay, I'm still going to have a nice long day in Canberra. I got a day room so that I could have a couple of hours nap, had my acupuncture before and after. And then I just, yeah, I came home in the afternoon that day and I didn't have the worry of him being there and having to be entertained as well. So that sort of was a bit of a reducing of stress to not have him there to sort of worry about. And even the fact that I could then have a bit of a nap during the day and just be really chilled and I guess self-focused
Stick
on
your
that
legs up the
day.
wall and help get gravity to help and all the rest of it.
Exactly, while munching on my McDonald's fries.
All of the things.
Yeah, all the things.
You must have been
Yeah.
really nervous going into that last transfer, though, I'm thinking
I was.
this is really my last shot.
Yeah, literally my last shot for my genetics. I actually, so just before what was meant to be my last egg collection that was cancelled, I had to order two more vials of the donor sperm from the US. So he's inactive as a donor, but there were some available for potential siblings.
Yep.
So thinking that I was doing another egg collection, I ordered two more. So now I've got, of course, two vials of his sperm just sitting there. So I'm not sure long term what I'll do with those, but I don't want to rush to get rid of them, even though I can't ever use them. Yeah, knowing that it was my last shot. And then, of course, I didn't rule out the potential of an egg donor. A friend who's not super close, I'd say more of an acquaintance than a really close friend, she at one point offered me eggs and, you know, forever grateful for that offer. But yeah, it was, I think the universe was just conspiring. You know, we'd have catch-ups planned and one of us would be sick and then we'd cancel and all of these sorts of things. It just wasn't really falling into place. So I sort of like, oh, I didn't want to put all my hopes on that eventuating. So then at the same time, I'm like, oh, I just need this embryo transfer to work out. I really do. And then, yeah, so luckily, oh my gosh.
So I'm
So,
assuming if it
yeah.
was me, you'd be getting like the NIPT test, and then after you had that result, then you'd really relax and believe it's real.
Well, it, yeah, so the embryo was tested and it, if the chromosomes were deficient in the way the testing suggested, the embryo wouldn't have even implanted. So I take that as a huge positive and the fact that the pregnancy is ticking along, the HCG was rising as it should. So that was all looking really positive for those mosaic results to be inaccurate. I have still had, I've had, the Percept NIPT, I think it's through the Victorian Genetics. I can't remember their acronym, but they are really specialised in sort of questionable embryos. That's a horrible way to express it. You know what I mean anyway. So I've only just I've had that. I'm waiting on the results. So yeah, I mean I've told myself based on really nothing scientific or necessarily logical that everything is fine and it's going to be fine. But that will reveal if there's still an anomaly with those chromosomes, I will have to have an amnio. I just so far see the positive in that, you know, if it was as bad as they had thought it could be,
It
I
wouldn't even turn into a
statistically,
baby.
exactly. So it's tracking well. And I just kind of think, wow, she was just patiently waiting there all those years while I was faffing around doing all those other rounds of IVF. And that mum, come on, you know.
Yeah,
Get yourself in order.
I'm
Hello, like what do you want? Like, what, do I have to send out sparklers and fireworks? I'm here. You know, I'm in the freezer. Just use me.
I made it
So,
easy for you. Come on, where'd you go spend all that money for?
yeah, you didn't need to waste all that time and effort on all those other rounds of IVF. But so that makes it even more special, really. Yeah. So, oh, just crazy. What a journey.
And have you had a
Definitely.
think already about what it's going to be like when you've got two and things that you'll do maybe differently to what you learned from Arlo?
Yeah, I have. So yeah, first thing definitely with feeding, it'll just be any sign of a cry in a newborn. Okay, yep, feed you again. I don't care if I only just fed you. So that's a huge one. But otherwise, I didn't really give breastfeeding a red hot go. I sort of didn't even last a month. And you know, like you'd never know from looking at Arlo, whatever. But I think a friend of mine recently said for her it didn't click until 6 weeks. So I think I might try and at least hang out to the 6 week mark, if not 6 months, like I had originally thought, just to try and give it a red hot go. So that might be my takeaway there. I think it's just going to be navigating having the toddler and the newborn at once. So
How old will
I'm not,
Arlo be when she arrives?
could be three. So definitely gonna have the freezer stocked. I'm possibly gonna go back to Adelaide where my family are for a couple of months in my maternity leave. So then thinking about a potential house sitter or whatever to look after the cats during that time, because of course they should never be deprioritized just because I have human children now. So
It
just
does make
trying
it slightly easier if Arlo's just in daycare or something rather than having to take him out of school. So that's.
God, yeah, true. Yeah, that's a good point. So yeah, even just I guess the logistics of the labor, it's because I would ideally like to have spontaneous labor again. It depends how it all unfolds with that. I guess, I mean, I think statistically labor tends to start in the evening because of the melatonin production or something or other. So if that happens again, then I guess I can drop him at a daycare the next morning and then toodle on over to the hospital potentially.
I'm just sitting here going, the amount of people I know that the second one comes really fast. Maybe have another plan. I have a friend who had her second on their driveway because they didn't get to the hospital in time. So, yeah.
I probably have to look at my contingencies a little better, but definitely friends have offered to support me either in the birth or the looking after Arlo side of it. So it's like a choose your own adventure book. I mean, there are so many ways that could play out, but I don't really know what concrete plans to have in place and what to just speculate on. But I'll definitely be the same again and have my hospital bag in the car like a month prior and all that type of stuff. But I mean, that's pretty nothing-ish really in the scheme of the logistics, I guess. But in terms of, yeah, the Arlo wrangling, yeah, that shall be interesting because my Arlo labour was so long. Like I'm talking, like I know in the official labour length, they don't factor in that early part of the labour where your contractions are all over the place and everything, but I do because I lived it. So so I would say it was yeah, it was more than 24 hours. It was more like 30 hours. So I mean, I haven't read any studies on it. Can it drop by? Does it drop by more than half? Does it drop by? Yeah, who knows? I guess so.
All depends how determined she is to come meet you, maybe. I don't know. Dunno.
Yeah. So yeah, all right. You might have to check back in with me closer to October on what plans I've got in place. But yeah. I guess yeah, babysitters on standby and everything. But yeah, even then, it's just hard to even know until it starts to unfold. But yeah, I will have to seriously come up with some ideas, I
Yep.
think.
And have you managed to build much of a community of other solo mums around you?
To an extent, not as much in the flesh as I would like. I definitely think, obviously, there's a huge social media connection like Instagram sort of world and the Facebook pages and everything. And I do in the flesh have a couple of solo mum friends. But I just often haven't found that when the catch ups are coordinates with my availability, unfortunately. So I've got to put in more of an effort and hopefully on maternity leave I'll be able to. I'm a shift worker, so often the catch ups on a Sunday I'm working or whatever else. Yeah, so I should make more of an effort. It's also then you get a little bit, I sometimes get a bit shy about meeting new people, which is silly because I know that it'd be great to have that community around me. But one solo mum friend I do have, we first connected through a Facebook group because we were due a day apart with our first babies. So that's how we first connected. So we've been friends since we were pregnant with baby number one. She's already had her baby number two. A little girl as well. So yeah, so we've remained friends and throughout. But I would like to grow my community for sure because I think it is important. I sometimes find the Facebook pages can get a little bit, I know most people mean well with the advice, but sometimes I find it can get a little bit judgy and a bit like nitpicky of other people's parenting styles. So I definitely would want to make sure they were genuine friends and not like frenemies trying to mum shame or whatever. But I mean, that's true with any friends
Yeah, I
who are
think it's
parents,
about
really, isn't it?
finding the right groups.
Definitely. So, still working on that, I must admit. Do you
So just going
have
back
any
to
tips?
something you said then is that you're a shift worker.
Yes.
How do you make that work?
That's been a journey. So I always used to be a shift worker prior to Arlo, and obviously there was no complexity to it then. I just went to work and slept when I needed to. And I thought naturally that returning from maternity leave, I should find a Monday to Friday job because obviously that coincided with daycare and blah, blah, blah. And I tried it, but it just doesn't work for me. And I know that sounds selfish because it's not just about me. I have a child too, but I just found that, and I don't know if it is the ADHD or whatever it is, but I just felt like I was in Groundhog Day, trapped in just a hell of doing. I don't function well when I'm doing the same thing at the same time every day. I just love the variety. So for me, I was just finding that I was going quietly insane, trying to do Monday to Friday. So that's why I've gone back to shift work, and I'm just. And interestingly, the whole time I was Monday to Friday trying to get pregnant, didn't work, didn't work. As soon as I went back to shift work and I felt the stress relief of
Relaxed.
being back in my zone, pregnant. So,
Interesting.
it is a juggle. So Arlo has his 3 daycare days, and then I always work 12-hour shifts, so they often fall outside of daycare hours. So if I start at, say, 5 in the morning, my babysitter will come to my house at 4:30, and they'll be there from 4:30. And they'll then, when he wakes up, they'll get him ready for daycare, breakfast. They'll drop him off, and then I'll finish at 5. They'll be able to pick him up then when I finish work. Or today, for example, I'm working night shift, so Arlo's at daycare at the moment. So after we've finished our chat, I'll do a couple of jobs at home. I'll have a nap. Then I'll go to work at 5:30. A babysitter will pick Arlo up from daycare this evening, and she'll sleep over. She'll get obviously give him dinner, bath, and everything, and then sleep over. And then I'll be home at 6 tomorrow morning. So,
How did you even find babysitters that were willing to do that?
oh my gosh, I've been really fortunate, and it's going to sound a little bit ridiculous how I found this. a couple of them. One of them I found through Facebook, and she does house sitting, pet sitting, human babysitting. So found her that way. She's great. And the other two I actually found through my original cat sitter, who I sound so bad. I know, sorry. The one who was looking after my cats when I had just had Arlo. She'd already been looking after my cats for years and years. So I really trust her. She's always been just more than just a cat sitter. She's been, she's a valued friend and everything as well. So. She had someone fill in for her once when she was on holiday, and I asked her, "Oh, what do you do when you're not cat sitting and dog walking and everything?" She said, "Oh, actually, I babysit human children." I'm like, "Ah, do I
I
have a
need one
job
of
for
you.
you?" So it went from there with her, and then another one I also met through the same cat sitter at. We went to a drinks night one night, and then one of her other friends there mentioned that she. As a side hustle, does babysitting, and once again, because it's through that original cat sitter who I really trust, she helps out as well. She's great, so I've been really fortunate. There have been a few babysitters that have not of those ones who I'd say are the main ones who have sort of come and gone because they've been little red flags that I'm like, can't put my finger on it, but something doesn't feel quite right. So that's sort of done their time, and yeah. Don't book them anymore, but these ones, touch wood, I really trust, and they seem to really genuinely care about Arlo and me. So
I'm
yeah, I've
assuming
been
you get
fortunate.
your roster quite far in advance because you'd have to be
Thank
so
God I do.
organized to juggle everything. Wow.
Definitely, yeah. Luckily, I have several months in advance.
That's good.
So I had to just recently let a babysitter go, and that's another story in itself, but. She was my main babysitter, so now I'll sort of be, just using those three others in conjunction with daycare, and I'll just pick up casual daycare days to help if I need to, like sleep after a night shift or something like that. So, I mean, if you've never done shift work before, picking it up when you've got a young child, I wouldn't suggest to anyone. But if it's sort of all you've ever known and loved. And then normal work doesn't work for you, then you can make it work. So, and for me, I prefer the lifestyle. Like I sometimes like my days off are often during the week, and Arlo not being at school yet, then we can go and do things where there's not a million and one other people, and I can have Tuesdays off to go to swimming lessons with him or whatever. So I love the lifestyle personally. And it's working for us at this point. And even when he gets to school age, I think it will still be good. Like I'll be able to go and do reading or whatever during the week, or if I happen to have days off on school days. So I think we can make it work. So, yeah.
Yeah, probably the hardest part will be when he's at school and your daughter's in daycare and juggling that. But while they're both at
That's a
the
good
same
point.
place,
Yes,
yeah. As long as
yeah.
the
So
babysitter can do two at once, then should be okay.
yeah, I'll just try and focus on each little mini hurdle one at a time.
I'm already
And
like 20 years ahead,
yeah.
so
Yeah, I don't want to overwhelm myself. So I'll just think of those little achievable goals right
fine. We'll be fine.
Make it work. We always do, right?
So, how do you think becoming a mum has changed you as a woman?
So much more self-assured. I wouldn't say necessarily appearance-wise or physically I'm more self-assured, but I feel less qualms about asserting myself. I'm less prepared to just suck it up and put up with it to avoid a confrontation. And not to say I like confrontation or want to have confrontation, but all those things that you just compromise on for the sake of not having any drama or not wanting to look like the bad guy or whatever.
Or the
I don't
people
let my.
pleasing that comes with your ADHD. Yeah.
Oh my God, yeah. So that I feel less qualms now about asserting yourself. And when I've found historically that people love you while you're the giggly, easygoing person, and then as soon as you assert yourself, oh, like they just. But now I don't care because I can assert myself, and it doesn't mean anything bad about me, but I'm entitled to, state what's important to me. And yeah, people like it when you just are quiet and sit in a little box and don't try and rock the boat or question. But now I'm sort of less prepared to, and especially if it's anything relating to my child's welfare, I'm like, I don't care which feathers I ruffle if I need to check on his well-being or make sure that, he's being treated correctly. So I definitely feel much more confident in that sense. I'm still working on and it's not the right time now that I'm pregnant, obviously, but because yeah, my body is ever changing again. But working on feeling comfortable in my skin postpartum again will be, the next challenge. But I kind of think at least mentally I feel more self-assured. So hopefully that will translate to physically as well. That's what I'm hoping anyway. But
I don't know if you're like me, but I think suddenly having a daughter, you become a lot more conscious of not projecting your own thoughts about that and trying to be a better role
yeah.
for your
Well,
mental health
that's a
when
really
it comes
good
to
point.
your body and that sort of stuff as well.
Yeah, so that
I'm
will be a
very
different
conscious of.
thing in itself. Yeah, because I definitely do not want her to ever have any body hangups or anything. So yeah, that will be even more so. And I mean, even with Arlo, I mean, he sees me in all my unflattering glory, and at this age, obviously, it just
He just
doesn't
loves
matter.
you.
But exactly. So I hope that I can continue to encourage that, and even more so in a girl. Definitely, I think it's so important to try and fight those things that we grew up having to overcome. If I can avoid those ever being an issue, that would be lovely. So yeah, we'll see.
And if you look back now, is there anything that you wish you'd done differently in your journey?
Well, I wouldn't have waited. Yeah. yeah, if I could have just I think before I took the plunge, when I got the news of my AMH, and then I felt it validated my decision, and I felt confident in, I didn't care who questioned me because I felt I had grounds to be pursuing this now. It shouldn't have to come to that. You should, if you've got all of the provisions in place to be a mum, you've checked what your maternity leave situation is, whatever it might be. You feel ready emotionally, whatever else. You shouldn't have to justify it to other people. If you feel confident in your choice, and that you can make it work, and you're going to be a good mum, then just take the plunge and do it. Just don't. I mean, I was like, just this. Oh, this one next date might be the one. Like, just seriously, like, just don't even worry about that. Just And yeah, of course, not to say that, I mean, I have needs too, not to say I don't want to pursue that sort of companionship and whatever else down the track, but it's just at least it won't have that ticking clock hanging above it. It needs to happen now because I've only got X number of eggs left. Yeah, it'll be purely based on, yeah, just hoping to find someone for those fun reasons and not any of those time pressures. So I think that would be a different spin on it. But yeah, my biggest thing takeaway would be just, yeah, don't wait. Don't worry about what other people think. Just be confident in your choice, own your choice. And it's a totally valid choice. And as we've touched on earlier, it's not a backup plan. It's not a contingency for when life doesn't go the way you want it to. It's a valid, amazing, fulfilling choice. And I'm forever grateful. And even more so when I hear of people, you know, squabbling with partners to try and get them to pull their weight or whatever else. I'm like, oh, or even custody things or people who can't take their kids overseas because they have to get, you know, a crazy ex to sign the passport documentation or whatever. I mean, that it's never a consideration. So thank God.
Life is so much simpler in so many ways, just for you. It involves a lot of babysitters and logistics.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. But at least that's all down to me. So, yeah. So if only I could put it on my resume of all those logistics training. But yeah, I think that's
What's
all mumming though, isn't it? The juggle. The juggle is all mumming, I think.
it is. I don't know. It doesn't make a difference if you're solo or with a partner, I don't think. It's just what women do, isn't it? And we're good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I was going to ask if you had any advice for anyone who was just considering this, but I think you've covered that, and it's just go for it and don't wait. If it's what
Take
you
the plunge.
want.
Yeah. You don't have to prove yourself to anyone else to make it valid. Just own your choice. And if you're motivated by the desire to be a mum, to nurture, to love, to build your own family, those are all totally valid and suitable reasons to pursue it. It doesn't have to be because you've only got a few eggs left or because whatever else, the ticking time clock of your fertility or, you know, it doesn't have to be for those reasons. You could have ample eggs left and whatever else, but if you're ready, just do it.
To it. Perfect. Well, what a beautiful way to end. And thank you so much for sharing your story today, Lucy. I can't wait to see what happens when your little miss arrives.
Oh, thank you. It's been lovely chatting after following you for all this time. So thank you for letting me share my story.
You are welcome. I'm Alicia, and this is the No Need for Prince Charming podcast, bringing you stories of Australian solo mums who created their own happy ending. If you like what you heard, please follow or subscribe to make sure you don't miss out on future episodes, and leave a like, a review, or share with your friends to help others find it easier. Bye for now.